Session number 4588, reel 6.
Mrs. Burkhill, tape 6. That's very interesting, Mrs. Burkhill, you know, about the older child having this burden. Have you an example of that sort of situation you could tell us about?
Well, there are girls who actually the parents, we guaranteed them and the parents joined them ultimately. But Doris, the elder girl, never took to English life in the same manner. She always had a foreign accent. I mean, they were both at the purse, whilst the younger child, whom we had no difficulty whatsoever, she completely integrated into the purse. Her English was perfect. She went to Nottingham to do a course in pharmacology, and of course ultimately married. I mean, Doris married too, and her husband is a professor in Oxford, but I'm quite sure she still has her German accent. I mean, we had of course quite a number of these very interesting cases, which are just Cambridge cases, which are not East Anglian cases, because of course that was too big an area. When the evacuation came, an old lady came with two very small children called Coppold. The elder boy, who was of school age, had been evacuated with his school to Peterborough. The father and mother were both killed in Auschwitz. I was terribly keen to keep this family together, so that they would have a nucleus of feeling that they belonged. So I did my utmost to get the billeting officer of Peterborough to allow Harold Coppold to come to Cambridge. When he came, he was about 10. He was billeted with a very nice working class woman who found him shouting and crying in the night, and she was very worried and tried to soothe him. He could neither read nor write, though he obviously seemed an intelligent child, but there was a complete blockage. My secretary, Elizabeth Penman, who was also at Newnham, had another friend at Newnham who was a child psychiatrist. So we took Harold to this clinic, and she worked on him and found that the boy had thought that his father was sent into concentration camp because he told the Nazi that the father still had some cloth hidden away. He was quite a small child, and so he felt that he was to blame. And that had created such a blockage in him. We got him free. We told him, look, this would have been happened to your father anyhow. It has nothing to what you said. And we ultimately got him to believe us. We got him coached during the summer holiday. And within a year, we got him into the purse. Read and write perfectly well. And of course, we had him housed, and he saw his little brother and sister all the time, and the whole thing seemed to be quite happy. But then he became influenced by a boy in the press who was an Orthodox Jewish boy and wanted to go to Israel. And we couldn't make him think of anything else but to learn Hebrew and to go to Israel. And we said, look, take your school certificate. It would, then you can go to Israel. We'll be perfectly happy for you to go. But it'll help you. But it was no use. He had just one idea, and he didn't mind, in a way, leaving his little brother and sister, who I was so keen to a united family. And we then put him into the only Orthodox home of one of the hairdressers at Joshua Taylor's, who was Orthodox, whose son was, who had influenced him so, because he wanted to live a kosher life and everything like that. And he went ultimately to Israel. And so all my desire to keep the family united was helpless. And then the cousins of these children insisted that the children should be adopted by complete strangers in America, two different strangers, and so there was never any contact anymore. But I did always try to keep families united, if it were at all possible. I had the same trouble with the Catholic committees, exactly the same trouble, who did not see that brothers and sisters should meet in the holidays and feel that they are one family. And usually the history was very tragic. But whilst the movement was in power, they could insist that the children should spend their holiday together. And I did gain that with the Berenson family, where there were two boys in a Catholic monastic school in Hitchin, and the little girl was somewhere in Sussex. They did ultimately spend holidays together. I do not know what happened to the little girl, but the elder boy I found extremely intelligent. It was in our region. And the priest said, well, none of us have a degree above intermediate, we can't cope. So every week for 2 days he came and stayed with me in Cambridge, and I had him coached by the young history dons in Peterhouse. And that was terribly good for the boy, because he got into a family atmosphere, perfectly normal and free. And he sat for Oxford and Cambridge, and whilst he was sitting for the Cambridge major scholarship at St. John's, I got a wire to say he got the major scholarship at Balliol. So I told John's they did not need to correct his papers. And his brother came up to Cambridge too to read natural sciences. But I have lost complete contact with these two boys, but they must be all right. But I do not know what's happened to the girl. But there, the family was again reunited. The father committed suicide. He was a doctor and a Catholic, and his wife became pregnant, who was Jewish. And the Nazis made his life so terrible that he committed suicide. We tried to get the mother out with the boys, but the mother wouldn't leave her mother. And both the mother and the grandmother were killed in Auschwitz. And the nuns had the little baby, girl, and we had to do voice each.
We've been talking an awful lot about children, because I know that this was your very big task, wasn't it, to care for the children. But while we're talking about these sort of psychological and emotional problems, you dealt with a lot of women too, the domestic ladies that came over. What sort of worries did they have?
Oh, that was very heartbreaking. You see, out of 500 women, the Cambridge Refugee Committee brought over as domestics, only two had ever been domestics in their life. All the others were middle-class women or professional women who had kept their own servants. And it was very difficult to assess where to send them. Because when you know somebody socially, you don't really know how they would treat somebody who is in their power. And that was a terrible eye-opener to our trusting characters in the refugee committee. And I fear I had to blackball a whole number of my personal friends because they made these women so terribly unhappy. This was very difficult. And of course, there is one of the things that people forget about the refugee influx in Great Britain. It was a completely different influx than the Russian influx in 1917. Did I talk to you about that?
No, you haven't, not on the tape recorder.
Like,
yes, I would actually. I think it was very interesting what you said.
A great many Russians had to leave Russia in 1917 or whenever they could get out. The people who left Russia because of the revolution were either aristocrats or intellectuals who had a complete security of mind, security of emotion. They knew that their beliefs were the right beliefs, and what has happened to them was a question of misfortune, but it was a thing that was an accident in their life. They came to a great extent to Germany and France. Very few came to Great Britain because the Russian traveled much more on the continent than they did in Great Britain. To them, it did not matter to take on the lowliest of occupations because they knew they were right. Their ethics and their attitude to life and what they believed in was right. And you could therefore face a completely different status in life, as long as they could get together now and again and really have a good old chat about it all. And they were gay with it. Now, the Central European refugee most likely was either second or third generation out of the ghetto. They had to have They had fought terribly hard to get to a professional respectability. And for them to have to lower their standards of life and their intellectual work was a terrible insult. They really could not take it. They suffered very much under having to be a servant when they had a degree, or when they had a profession, or when they were an opera singer. And to cope with that was very difficult for us, because we couldn't do anything more for them. We had to keep to what we were allowed to do. One did one's best to help them over this difficulty. But I always realized the sort of extraordinary difference of attitude between Russia in 1917 and Central Europe in 38 and 9. Now and again one could help. I had a woman who was a gymnastic teacher who was terribly upset about having to be a domestic. So I arranged lessons for her to give lessons to my children and their friends, which of course my children very much disliked. But it started her on a career of coming back, and it gave her feeling of a sort of respecting herself again. What they lost is really respect in themselves. And that is a terrible thing to happen to anybody.
These people you knew in Cambridge who employed these ladies as domestics.
Sorry, I couldn't.
The people in Cambridge who employed these people as domestics. You said some of them treated them very harshly. Did they have no idea of what their circumstances
were? Yes, they were told the whole history. They were told who the people were, what their background was, and so on. But, I mean, it was just completely fantastic. I mean, that Don's wives could treat somebody who was in every way as good as them in an absolutely terrible manner.
What sort of things did they do?
Well, one of the examples that very much shocked me, I won't mention names, when a Don's wife and her children plus the refugee were out together, she made the refugee walk 3 steps behind, as not being part. I mean, she was too low a class to be at the same thing. I may say that lady didn't get another refugee to. They overworked them terribly. And of course you had the sort of little irritations of, in Germany you lay a table differently than in England. And there were permanent rows about that. Instead of saying in a friendly way, look, we do it that way. Would you like to be so kind and do it our way? There used to be terrible rows about such simple little things, you know. I mean, it was really, really quite heartbreaking. While some cases were completely fortunate. As I told you, out of my 500 people, women, I had 2 who were domestics. And I may say that the one is still with the same family I put her in 1938. And they couldn't part with one another. They're both old women now. And there they are, tied, you know. But as I say, this the difficulty was, of course, that those are the sort of people who didn't come out, and the Jews were not given to being domestic servants. It was not one of their trades.
When you think of the process of being a refugee in a foreign country, with your experience of refugees, what factors do you think are most important in making someone feel at home in a country, of integrating a person in a society?
Well, first of all, you had to stop them talking German in the street. That did not create a good impression. Because we, in the refugee committee, you see, Jesus gave us a very large house next door to our early little office. I don't think we paid any rent. And in it we had a canteen, we had reading rooms, and on the top floor we had our offices, and they could have dances there. And we, of course, were very keen to get English people to come in and get to know our refugees and invite them out and make the social contact, which was really very important. Of course, where there were children, the parents got, of course, integrated reasonably quickly because the children got integrated quickly. You see, it was very difficult because there were two classes of refugees. The one who wanted to forget all about it, all about the past, and wanted to start a new life and put that back into starting a new life. And then there were the others who couldn't forget, who surrounded themselves with all their past, and who couldn't settle in the sort of way, British ways at all. And they were usually, of course, definitely the older people. And it was very, very difficult, and one had to be very, very kind and patient with these people. But one sympathized with them. You see, the past had been a good past for them, and they came to a life in which they were just surviving. And that is very difficult for people to take. Where one had, of course, the case ultimately with people who came out of concentration camps. I mean, young people. Either they didn't want to know anything more about it. They wanted to put all at the back of them. And the others who wanted to live it and who didn't want to get away, who became intensely Orthodox, intensely involved with Israel. And you had this sort of difficulty. I found that the people who guaranteed children out of concentration camp, you see, you could get any child under 21 when the war was over who had a relative in England. You could get permission to bring them into this country. Now, all the ones that I came across, which of course is a small number, who were individually guaranteed by relatives, made their life again. They didn't want to remember the past. They wanted to start a new life, to learn, to live a free existence. In fact, one of them, of course, we took into our home, because she quarreled with her relatives. Won't mention names. And I mean, she's absolutely fantastic now. I mean, she's in Israel now, but she was a Czech girl. But now Feldberg took on a boy. One of his relatives sent him to Loughborough. And all went very well. Then, of course, he inherited a lot of money and is now in America and lives on his money. But I mean, he's all right. He never had any moment of difficulties. Then we visited a hostel near Letchworth. Boys who had TB, who had been brought in by the Orthodox Refugee Committee, a different committee than ours, you see. That was an after-war committee. And those boys were terribly keen to learn. It was a very interesting case because all these children out of Auschwitz and Belsen and so on were medically examined by the medical officer of the British Embassy before they were allowed to come. They all went to Windermere. And a whole lot of them developed acute TB. So they'd all gone through screening. There was nothing then. As soon as they got into good air, good food. It was run by the Montefiores. And we went, Elizabeth and I went to visit them. And what the boys wanted, they were all bad cases, wanted to have somebody to teach them, to do matriculation, to hear music, to do art. So we toddled back to Letchworth Committee and said, now we've got this boys in that house. Can you arrange that they will have this? And they said, yes, we'll do everything, we'll do what we can. And we wrote to London, to that committee, and said, we have arranged that these boys should have education, should have music, and so on. And we got the letter back to say, as these people who are going to teach them are not Jews, they cannot go to the home.
Who wrote that letter?
I was very, very hurt. Because what they wanted is to forget, to start a new life, to be again humans. But, and that is what you found with the after-war children who came out from concentration camps backed by Orthodox Jewish committees. You could not help them in any way. We had the same thing in Great Chesterfield with small children. Couldn't do anything.
Could I ask you a question now about the 1930s and the children you were getting out of Germany then? Did you find that because you'd got the children out of a country,
oh, yes, I can tell you,
that it was easier for the parent,
yes,
after,
yes,
to get out because of that?
Is going. Yes, I did want to tell you that. Our idea of the Cambridge Committee was very much that if we could get the children out, the parents would be able to slip out, which they couldn't possibly do with children hanging to their coattails. We never thought we would have the children for 8, 10 years or forever. We simply thought it was a good way of helping the parents. And of course, the parents really showed fantastic trust in complete strangers, people of not of their religion, in trusting their children to us, which of course meant that the children who came over were very much children of parents who had some knowledge of what the world was really like, what other places in Germany were like. And so the largest number of our children were of very highly skilled artisans, big merchants, and of course a great many academics. So in fact we got very much a middle class layer of children. What is very interesting when you look at this, that we really did succeed to get a great many parents out afterwards. Sometimes we only got out one parent. But we did, in a way, very much ease the problem of getting some of the grown-ups out of Germany. They went, of course, all over the world. Some went to America. Some went to South America, Mexico, Venezuela, Australia, China. It was really quite an extraordinary spread of where the parents went to. It was where you could get a visa to go to. To begin with, South America was very generous. And then they got afraid, and they would only let Catholics come in and not Jews. And you had this sort of problem everywhere.